This is Maine Currents, independent local news, views, and culture. I'm Amy Brown. Today we have an update on what's happening with the seemingly never-ending efforts to protect Sears Island from one proposal after another to develop it. It's a 940-acre island in Penobscot Bay near Searsport. Here's an update on what's currently happening with Sears Island from four of the people who've been working to protect it.
My name is Jill Howell. I live in Belfast, and I'm a volunteer with the campaign to protect Sears Island with some kick. My involvement related to protection of the island started through Upstream Watch. I was previously working for Upstream Watch and became engaged, I guess, about a year and a half ago. At the time, I believe the Offshore Wind Advisory Committee had just concluded, and there was a feeling that Sears Island was going to be chosen despite all of the reasons and evidence why Mack Point was a better alternative for the wind port, and have been, I guess, involved ever since. And on a personal note, as somebody who lives in Belfast and loves the coast of Maine, for all the coastline we have, it's really difficult to access unless you have waterfront property. And Sears Island is an exception to that, with all of the coastline that can be accessed for free with trails as well. So that's a place that I frequently visit with my dog, just to be along Penobscot Bay and kind of within nature.
Hi, I'm David Italiander. I've been a member of the Friends of Sears Island board for about 15 years. Our vice president was a member of the Offshore Wind Advisory Group, so we paid pretty close attention. We knew pretty early on that it would be Sears Island. There was little doubt. I did get involved with the Campaign to Protect Sears Island, which is an activist group, because the Friends of Sears Island is a land management entity, a 501c3, and we don't get involved in political activities. The campaign is an activist group, and they certainly do.
My name is Donna Gold. I live in Stockton Springs, and it was during COVID that I really started to need to be outside in the woods and near the water. And that's when I really fell in love with Sears Island, though I've lived in this area for 36 years, 37. So when the wind turbine scare came, I heard one of our legislators denigrate the island, and as if it wasn't important enough or beautiful enough to preserve. And I realized I really felt I got to do something. And then I've been a journalist for most of my working life and an oral historian for also most of my working life. I have a background in anthropology. And thanks to some suggestions, I realized that I could use those skills to start talking to people who are on the island, you know, asking them what brings them to the island, what it means to them, maybe get them to talk a little bit about some of their experiences on the island, and also what they'd lose if Sears Island really became a wind port. And then I created a website called Sears Island Stories with the help of Friends of Sears Island, searsislandstories.org. And also I receive stories from people. You can either do it through the website or by just emailing me at stories@searsisland.org.
Hi, I'm Chris Buchanan, and I live in Searsport. My wife grew up in this area, and her mother actually grew up across the street. So she's a fifth generation person from this area. And I have a history of being active in trying to protect environmental and cultural places of significance in Maine. I had worked on the East-West Corridor project, trying to stop that from bisecting the state over 10, 12 years ago now. And because I live here and we enjoy Sears Island so much with the family, and I think historically, it's been so significant, especially for working people here in this area who have used Sears Island for so long as a place to recreate and access the water and just access nature that don't have to pay anything. to find that. And so I'm involved in trying to facilitate the campaign to protect Sears Island with a group of amazing people that are all working to protect the island and try to hold some of the environmental groups accountable for not questioning the state's information about why Sears Island was chosen as the primary site for this offshore wind port. You know, we, along with the Alliance for Sears Island, have found numerous errors in the state's information, the DOT specifically, about Sears Island being the primary choice. And so many people who have been active in protecting Sears Island over the years understand that the state has been targeting Sears Island for port development for an extremely long time. So, you know, we're very concerned that this current proposal is actually a effort on the part of the Department of Transportation and the governor's office to develop a cargo port on Sears Island, especially at this time, because the offshore wind port is actually not feasible commercially. There's no money for it. Federally, there's no money for it. But the groups that are continuing to promote it are kind of paving the way, honestly, for an industrial development of significance on Sears Island that would degrade the entire island.
What I was surprised about when I talked to so many people was how many people came there for respite just because they needed a place to rest, a place to rest their minds. And that's what was most surprising to me. I mean, there was a woman from Searsport who used to come every day after work just to walk. And often it was dark, right? You know, she's working, she was working outside of Searsport, and often it was dark, and she'd just walk for like about an hour in pitch black because of a major tragedy in her life. And she said, you know, the island's so peaceful, it helped me to feel better. And she needed that. And then there's this man from Africa who I kept seeing sitting on the causeway. And he said, he's from an island off of Africa, actually. And he just says, it's the water. You know, I can be here and see the water and I come to recharge, he said. Oh, but also people come for their kids a lot.
I think if you stand by the gate for a few hours and just observe who's coming on and off the island, you'll see old people, young people, families, individuals, dog walkers. It's very popular with dog walkers. And you just, it's basically everybody in our community loves Sears Island. That's became clear when it was threatened. And certainly the development on Sears Island galvanized the town. I would say it's probably an 80-20 issue, which is highly unusual for Searsport, which usually splits down the middle on almost everything. So in that sense, you know the community loves the island, and they use it, and they have a connection, and that's why they love it so.
I would say I'd probably go out to the island once or twice a week just because of how close it is, and that's sort of all year round. And no matter what day it is, sort of what the weather is, whether it's rainy and cold or a beautiful summer day, I've never been out there by myself. There is always people out there. It's incredibly well used. And to hear some people, especially legislators or representatives, denigrate the island and say that it's not worth protecting or it's not Bar Harbor, you shouldn't have to travel hours to a beautiful place like Acadia. These places that people find respite, that they're able to reconnect with nature, that they're able to connect, like be on the water, they should be accessible. They should be the type of place that you can go to after work. It shouldn't be an event to get yourself to a place like Sears Island. And the idea that there is dismissal of it as a place not worth protecting to me is absurd.
I want to jump in too and just stress how many educational programs happen there. It's what everybody has said, but it's also been used by schools for field trips. There is a huge like clam effort to reintroduce baby clams. That also is a part of the town effort. And, you know, the Game Loft, when they existed, they used it to bring teenagers out there and do games in nature. It's like Donna said, it's an incredibly healing place for people that go there. And that's the kind of thing that unfortunately would be lost by development with, you know, lighting and fencing and noise and traffic. Even if there was a designated parking area, I think that's important to note. It's the only place like it in the entire state of its size. And it's incredibly significant, I think, that it is one of the last uninhabited, mostly undeveloped places within Penobscot ancestral territory where Penobscot people can access the water for free any time of day. I think that's really important. And it plays a tremendous role in the health of the greater Penobscot Bay.
I'd like to also point out that in the plans for the wind port, there was never any guarantee that access to the conserved part of the island would be maintained, because the transportation parcel actually is in front of the conserved area, and you need to cross it. And if they were going to use the existing road for their main road, which was the last plan, then it would essentially cut off access, because it would need to be fenced, it would need security, and would virtually cut off access to the conservation area. If you go back far enough, I mean, Governor King tried actually three different port ideas. He wanted a wood chip port, then a dry cargo port, and then a six-berth container port. Baldacci came in, and there was a brief idea of an LNG terminal on the island, and that was met with so much strong opposition, it was quickly dropped. But he came up with the idea, because of all the resistance historically, that perhaps there could be an agreement of some sort. And he called together the Sears Island Planning Initiative. They, after almost a year of work, year and a half of work, they came to an agreement. They decided that 2/3 of the island would be conserved. 1/3 would be reserved for transportation purposes, a cargo terminal. They kind of got some wishy-washy agreements that they wouldn't be fought so hard if they were permittable. And they formed the Joint Use Planning Commission to actually come up with the verbiage, and it was, in fact, it wasn't signed into law, but it was a formal agreement, and the conservation area was created out of that. Maine Coast Heritage Trust agreed to hold the conservation easement, and Friends of Sears Island is the land management entity that cares for the conservation area. In reading the agreement, it does limit it to cargo purposes and marine transportation. And certainly a manufacturing facility for wind turbines is not a cargo port or a container port or even marine transportation. Add to that the prohibition of soil exportation in the agreement, and the fact that they would have to remove 2 million cubic yards of soil, exporting from the island over a million cubic yards and dumping the other million cubic yards into the ocean in order to expand the footprint of the terminal. So it was in clear violation of the agreement, and that seemed to mean very little to legislators or anyone else.
Another piece of that agreement was that Mack Point would be prioritized first over Sears Island, that if there was capacity at Mack Point, that would be prioritized ahead of new development at Sears Island, which, based on everything that we've seen from Sprague and the proposal from the state for Sears Island, Mack Point can accommodate this wind port. The state is just choosing not to go that route.
I just wanted to jump off of what Jill said there and add that there's this clear distinction between development of the research array for the University of Maine to have this turbine research that they've been doing for a long time be tested and produce, 3.5 gigawatts of power, which would be enough to allow Maine to meet its energy goals just from the research array. But the state also wants to simultaneously develop a commercial wind port. And there's a rub there, because first of all, I want to say Mack Point could actually handle a commercial scale wind port based on the state studies as well as Sprague studies. But additionally, there is this issue happening where, because we haven't developed this research array first or launched these research turbines, this attempt to kind of piggyback on that and develop a commercial scale wind port before doing the research array has brought up a lot of problems.
If you're just joining us, this is Maine Currents on WERU-FM. Chris Buchanan, David Italiander, Donna Gold, and Jill Howell are residents of Searsport and neighboring towns and have been working on efforts to protect Sears Island.
Normally, in the industry that existed before the moratorium, normally you would have a developer would approach the electricity provider, like our Public Utilities Commission, and would make a deal. And from that deal, they would get the credit, basically, to create the turbines, the develop their whatever facilities they need to create those turbines, and basically manufacture and deliver and fulfill the contract. That's not how the state did it. The state has done the whole thing in reverse. They basically come up with the idea of the floater and the turbine, the University of Maine's Vulturnus floater. They then decided they needed a facility to produce that floater and went from there. Rather than finding a developer, having a competitive situation where you put it out to bid, like all the other states did when they were developing wind, and make it a normal commercial process. So this has been nothing like a commercial process. This has been basically deciding the design first, building a terminal around it, and then hoping they can sell that design in a commercial market that they totally ignored in the entire process.
And one of the reasons that's so significant, I'm so grateful you brought that up, David, is because many competitive wind turbine designs actually do not require the kind of space that the state is seeking for Sears Island. Mack Point would be more than adequate for a lot of the competitive designs that did actually move forward on the global stage years ago.
Publicly, I have heard many of the larger state environmental organizations like NRCM or Maine Audubon talk about how the climate crisis is the most urgent, critical issue, and we need to transition away from fossil fuels, and this offers a solution. And the state went through a process and arrived at a conclusion of where they wanted to put the port, and they are going with that. It is too urgent to not go with that. So they are falling in line to support a port anywhere. We've heard those that are supportive of the port on Sears Island say that they are neutral about location. But if the state has chosen Sears Island, then they're going to back that 100%. And I guess from my perspective, they jumped to supporting this port on Sears Island without thoroughly evaluating and being critical of what information was coming from the state and DOT. We know there's a history with the state trying to develop the island. This is just the latest effort in a decades-long history. And we also know that these agencies that are trying to develop the island, specifically DOT, have not always acted like following the law, to be perfectly honest. Like, they illegally filled wetlands and were penalized by the EPA for that during construction of the causeway as part of one of the many development efforts. So even if you think the climate crisis is incredibly urgent and we must transition away from fossil fuels, which I don't disagree with at all, there also needs to be like accountability from these agencies and a hard look of what sort of evidence they are providing to make sure that it actually is true.
There would be as many union jobs on Mack Point, should this go on to Mack Point, as on Sears Island.
Absolutely, definitely. There would be the same amount of jobs. That's been acknowledged by the unions as well. The campaign to protect Sears Island worked with our local representative, Reagan Paul, to put forth two bills. One was to put the entire island into conservation permanently, and the other one was to reinstate the sand dune protections that were stripped last session. Neither of those efforts were successful. It was, honestly, it was a bit contentious, I think, because Representative Paul is against offshore wind. A lot of members of the campaign promote offshore wind and want industrial wind to happen. However, the conservation of the island is our primary focus. So sometimes these efforts make, you know, strange bedfellows. And we decided it was really important to go across political lines and just try to get the conservation of the island in the public eye. And we're going to be continuing to do presentations. David and Jill and I have done a couple presentations, and we're trying to go on the road with it. So,
yeah, the hope is over the long term, either through legislation or perhaps a benevolent governor who's farsighted, we can have the rest of the island entered into permanent conservation.
Yeah, we have an arm of our campaign now called Wild and Free Forever. And so our focus is on promoting the importance of conserving the entire island forever and to make sure that it is freely accessible to the public.
DOT, the state, was going to rely heavily on federal funding in order to move this forward. And so that is just not a possibility under the Trump administration, who is openly hostile to every type of renewable energy for the next 4 years. And I think it's also important to say that even before the administration change, DOT had applied for 4 federal grants in 2023 and 2024, ranging from $8 million to $456 million. And even with an administration that was promoting renewable energy development, this project was still denied all of the grant funding. So from a feasibility perspective, in terms of like how this would be paid for, there is no money for this from the federal side. And even when there was, the project was deemed not strong enough by the reviewing agencies to grant it funding. It really does feel like the wind port is not going to move forward, at least under this federal administration. But when the bills that Representative Paul introduced related to reinstating the sand dune protections and protecting the whole island came before the Natural Resources Committee at the legislature, it was clear that DOT wanted to reserve this parcel and didn't want preservation of the whole island to move forward, because if it's not a wind port, it's going to be another type of port. They have their eyes set on development. So if a wind port is not possible now due to the federal administration, they still don't want to pursue preservation in order to maintain the possibility of developing later. So from at least my perspective, these environmental groups that are supporting a wind port right now are in some ways paving a way for development of a port on this island that has nothing to do with addressing the climate crisis or developing renewable energy.
Well, nor very likely will it even have anything to do with cargo, because there's just no demand, given the fact that Mack Point has perhaps 50% excess capacity because a lack of demand of freight. So the only thing left would be other industrial developments that are not cargo and are not wind. And we know that the DOT has been trying to develop Sears Island for over 50 years, ever since they got their hands on it. They've wanted to develop it. So it won't end here unless it's conserved. That's really the only answer to protect it long term.
This is Chris. I would love to see more people get involved with the Friends of Sears Island. Actually, the Friends lead a lot of educational programming. They do hikes. They bring people out on the island. And I would just love to see support of the group that's already raising public awareness about the importance and the significance of the island happen. The campaign to protect Sears Island, we're focusing on conservation. We're fundraising so that we can continue to get that message out there. And we're also going to be doing our best to hold these groups accountable that have kind of abandoned their environmental focus, in our opinion. So you can find us at the campaign to protect Sears Island.org. I think it's protectsearsisland.org. We're on Facebook, where we have a website, and you can email us at protectsearsisland@gmail.com.
I'll take it. This is David. I want people to who actually want to see the wind port or similar development and to see wind turbines in the Gulf of Maine, consider that for the next 4 years, nothing will happen. But around the world, developments will continue to happen. So by the time we ever get back into it, the entire landscape will have changed. We will know a lot more about what designs are commercially viable and what are not. And we'll have to have the entire discussion from scratch, because the world will have changed so much by the time we get back into the discussion about viable floating offshore wind. I want to also echo Chris's ideas of supporting Friends of Sears Island. The website is www.friendsofsearsisland.org. We are also on Facebook, and we certainly would appreciate any and all support.
I would like to say...
This is Donna.
Yeah. So one of the very first responses I got to this website that I created, and I created with Friends of Sears Island, actually, was from a combat wounded veteran struggling with PTSD. And he wrote something to me, and he said, "Sears Island saves lives." And he comes to the island to enjoy, this quote, "to enjoy from the innermost reaches of my traumatized heart to the crown of my troubled head, the wonders that an open, uncluttered, non-commercialized island can yield." And just that just broke my heart, that how important it is. Also, to people who are in wheelchairs, they have a road that they can go up. People with strollers have a road they can go up. It makes it accessible. And if anybody wants to add their story or take a look at what the Sears Island Stories project is, they can look at searsislandstories.org and email me at stories@searsisland.org. Thank you.
And I guess I would just end with, even though the legislative effort this past session to pass a bill to extend protections to the entire island failed, that is like just the start, not the end. Since, I guess, the previous legislative session, when there was the rollback of the sand dune protections, and then this past one in 2025 with the attempt to reinstate those protections and protect the entire island, these are all opportunities for us who want to protect the island forever, to keep it wild and free, to talk to everybody, to talk to representatives, to talk to people who use the island, to talk to people in the area, in the state, and educate them. There are a lot of loud voices with significant power and money behind them that are getting their message out that Sears Island is the only way for Maine to pursue offshore wind. And we just disagree with that. So I'm sure there will be more bills to come, and also just other efforts by us to continue to provide the information that we can both have a wild and free Sears Island and renewable energy development on Mack Point. It doesn't have to be one or the other. And regardless, the effort to protect the island will continue.
All right. Joe gets the last word. Thank you.
That was Jill Howell, Donna Gold, David Taliander, and Chris Buchanan. The websites that they mentioned are searsislandstories.org, protectsearsisland.org, and friendsofsearsisland.org. I'm Amy Brown. You've been listening to Maine Currents, independent local news, views, and culture. Keep it tuned here to your community radio station, WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill.